Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our next conversation with author Darren Perry, we're going to visit the first monument that was built to commemorate the Bear River Massacre. At the time, they called it a battle, and Darren will talk about how it changed from a battle to a massacre, and how this monument came to be. It's going to be a very fun conversation, and you definitely want to watch it here on YouTube, because you can see the actual monument. That we kind of take a field trip on this interview, so it's going to be a fun conversation. You won't want to miss it. And oh, by the way, if you want to see the entire episode without any cuts in it, it's about 2.5 hours, by the way, you can either sign up at our new membership at youtube.com/gospeltangents, or at gospeltangents.com, click on the yellow subscribe button, or patreon.com/gospeltangents. Make sure that I'm a Facebook friend with you, and I'll add you to our secret insiders group where you can see the entire video uncut. So it's going to be a great conversation. You definitely won't want to miss it. Check out our conversation. And then I'm just going to kind of walk in here. And what can you tell me about this monument?
So, we're close to the site of the Bear River Massacre, but in 1932, the pioneers that lived in this area and the local Mormon settlers decided they wanted a way that they could really remember the events that took place here. And so, it was a community event. The lady that organized it thought she would do a rock collecting exercise, and all she asked of the citizens was, we want your families to bring one rock and submit a written history. And it doesn't necessarily have to do anything with the rock, but we want a written history of your family. And so this rock collecting campaign started. Some of these rocks are from Nauvoo temple site.
Wow, really?
There's rocks from all over, from when the pioneers came west. And so these rocks had a significant historical reference to the family that submitted them. And so from that, this monument was developed. And the first plaque that you're looking at today, right now, was erected in 1932. It was the Battle of Bear River. It pretty just factually laid out things the way they thought it happened. Troops attacked an Indian village, 18 military died, 230 Shoshone died. It talks about the women and children combatants in this to justify why they could kill so many women and children, I suppose. But this was how the saints wanted this place to be remembered, by this plaque. 20 years later, in 1952, they erected another plaque that's on the other side. And it's almost like the pioneers probably thought, well, that doesn't really reflect our role and how our pioneer women took care of the soldiers. So on the other side of the, we can walk around here, but on the other side, in 52, the Daughters of Utah pioneers put this second plaque in honor of the pioneer women. And it just said, attacks by the Indians on the peaceful inhabitants in this vicinity led to the final battle here. It's still called a battle. On January 29th, the conflict occurred in deep snow and bitter cold. Scores of wounded soldiers were taken to the battle from the battlefield to the Latter-day Saint community of Franklin. Here, pioneer women trained through trials and necessities of frontier living, nursed back the wounded until they could be removed to Camp Douglas, Utah. And then they go on to say two women and their children found alive after the encounter were given homes in Franklin. So the locals, the saints that grew up in this area, this is how they wanted what happened here to be memorialized. And so my grandmother, May Timbimbu Perry, was very instrumental in going back to Washington, D.C. more than 10 times with journals from soldiers and other historical writings that she'd found over the years that really described it more as a massacre. And because of May Timbimbu Perry, the National Park Service ended up putting the plaque here on the side and calling it what it is. It's really the Bear River Massacre. So for years, the Park Service referred to this as the Battle of Bear River. But because of my grandmother's doggedness and trying to change the way and what it really went, in 1990, the Park Service reversed course and quit calling it the Battle of Bear River and started calling it the Bear River Massacre. And so, funny story, every January 29th, we have a commemoration here at the site. Maybe 300 to 500 people every year. First timers come and read the plaque and they're horrified by what they read. And they call the DUP and say, what are you going to do about that? Doesn't reflect what history. And so the DUP for years pushed back in not wanting to change anything on the plaque. And me as a historian and even a tribal leader, I've not advocated for them to take down the plaque, but I tell them there's an empty spot on the other side that we could maybe put up another plaque and accurately describe what took place in today's context. I'm not a history eraser. I don't want to erase history. I don't want to use my values and the things I know today to judge their feelings in 1932 or in 1863. I don't think that's my place. But I think those plaques give historical context to what happened here in their view. And I just thought another plaque really representing what really took place would be fitting. But the Daughters of Utah Pioneers, their leadership team came together, and they're actually, a new plaque is being made as we speak.
Oh, nice.
And they're going to take down that plaque.
Really?
And replace it with something that starts out here in this vicinity. More than 400 Shoshone men, women, and children were massacred at the hands of the U.S. Army. And so they really went out of their way to come up with something that they ran it by me for approval, and which they didn't need to do, frankly. It's their land, their monument. But it really accurately tells what happened there that day. And so we'll wait and see what, you know, the final product looks like. But the narrative is really fair, and it's more accurate to what we feel took place. And so for years and years, this has been the only place we could meet. And then in 2002, a foundation back in New York City raised enough money for us to buy 35 acres of the massacre site, which the 35 acres we purchased is just across the street here. And it's not the massacre site. It's close, but it's not where the site took place. Mm-hmm. And the massacre spot was not for sale. And so we bought land, and we're for once landowners, because we're a tribe that joined the LDS Church in 1873, and we were never given a reservation because of it. And so the fact that we now own land was a big deal to our people. And so from then has grown to what we own today. We own more than almost 700 acres of all of the sacred site where the bodies lay. None of the bodies were buried that day. So it was important to us to make sure we get that land so we can protect it and then eventually build an interpretive center on it. But this is the first place I like to stop and just gives people a sense of what people thought back in the day. But one thing I've learned about monuments over time is monuments only let you see what they want you to see. And you just need to be careful. I like to use the analogy. It's like a view from a window that has been carefully placed to exclude a whole quadrant of a beautiful landscape. You only get to see what they want you to see. And so that's kind of a snapshot in time of what they want you to see and what they want you to remember. But history is so much more than that. And just because they want it remembered this way doesn't mean that that's the way it happened. And so it's just been important to us to be able to tell the story from our perspective. And so this is the beginning that we can really do that.
Cool. Anything to say about those?
Well, you know, those signs have been there for quite a few years now. And there was actually the Northern Railroad came through this area and destroyed a lot of the artifacts that probably some people could find. It changed the landscape a little bit. We believe, and this is an outdated sign, we believe more than 400 were actually massacred. And there were actually between 550 and 600 Shoshones that were camped here on the morning of January 29th.
So this was just about 6 years after the Mountain Meadows Massacre.
Yeah. But the tree behind is an honor tree. We didn't establish it, but people come in and leave things in the tree that have significance to them and the reason they're doing it.
That's interesting.
And they picked the worst tree possible to hang him in. It's a Russian olive, which was not indigenous to this area. And so we're actually trying to get rid of all the Russian olives in the area.
Oh, that's funny.
And then I was up here earlier this week. Those things that are hanging in the tree over here, they're bodies. And so somebody went to a little bit of work and decided to come up and hang this. And so this is new within the last couple of days.
Oh, really? Cool. All right, so are we done with this site
pretty much? Let's run up the road and I'll show you what Idaho did for us a few years ago.
Okay.
Is it right here, the power?
Now, by the way, was this part of, it's right there. Was this part of Utah back then?
Yeah, it was the Utah Territories.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with author Darren Perry, author of The Bear River Massacre. In our next conversation, we're going to visit the second memorial site and we'll find out where Colonel Connor came across to take on the Native Americans.
Connor's Overlook is okay. What I was pointing to. There's a group of trees over there on that bluff. And so that's where Connor and his men first appeared on the bluff. They were led by a Mormon scout named Porter Rockwell. He knew where the Shoshones were camped. And for $5, he was hired by the troops in Salt Lake to bring him to that point. And so the village would have been over there more to the right. But that's called Connor's Overlook today.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents. And for $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruptions. If you'd like to see the whole video, that's just $8 a month, and you can sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents or on our website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button, or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and I'll just need to make sure that we're Facebook friends, and I'll add you to our insiders group, and you can see the entire interview uncut. If you'd like to get PDF transcripts of our interviews, those are just $10 a month. And for just $15 a month, I will send you paperback versions of our transcripts as soon as they come out. Or, of course, you can buy them on Amazon as well. Go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all of our transcripts there. Don't forget to sign up for our updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Of course, you can follow us at Gospel Tangents on Twitter. To hear our interviews updated to your podcast player, go to tinyurl.com/gospeltangents and make sure you give us a 5-star review. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, Of course, black, beautiful gold, and of course, Utah red. I probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.